You're listening to Artbreaker. On this episode, we're taking you inside a live event that's part conversation, part meal, part performance, and interspersing it with a conversation with the creator, Jen Ray.
Cheers, everyone. Welcome. My name is Rose Hiscock. I'm the director of Science Gallery Melbourne, and it is my great pleasure to welcome you this evening and acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation and acknowledge that we're meeting on their lands. And with Auntie Caroline Briggs in the house, I'm particularly proud to have her with us and make mention of the fact that our First Nations peoples are our first artists and our first scientists. And for a gallery dedicated to the collision of arts and science, that's very, very powerful. So a special welcome to Auntie Caroline. Lovely to have you with us. And to all of you tonight, you're in for a treat, a recipe for disaster. It starts now. I'm going to hand over to Jen Ray to take you through what you've got in store.
Hello, welcome. I too pay my respects, and it's an honour to have Nauriet Caroline Briggs here tonight. You know what's really thrilling about seeing all of you in front of me is that we never said who the provocateurs were. We didn't say who the speakers were. We didn't release the menu and so forth. So I welcome you, and I'm honored that you brought your curiosity with you tonight.
You might be curious where we are right now, where this recording has taken you. Well, let's play a quick game and see if you recognize this voice.
When do we go for a ride?
If you're stumped, that's the voice of one Max Rokitansky, also known as the Road Warrior, or Mad Max. This event took place in the University of Melbourne's South Lawn Car Park, a beautiful space that's like a cross between a bunker and a cathedral, with arched concrete domed roofs.
You know, the South Lawn Car Park, you know, 40 years ago was when Mad Max was filmed in there, but it was also where Heston Blumenthal held his MasterChef dinner.
So I thought I'll do hero ingredients. But the selection of food that we had for hero ingredients were pig's heads and daikon and legumes like lentils and chickpeas and sourdough bread, and then throw in some insects and some homemade butter and so forth. This is how the menu came together.
It was a very off-the-cuff comment initially about mashing the two together, but essentially that's what Recipe for Disaster was the mashup with those, and that informed our food choices and the menu.
So the event Recipe for Disaster was a way to pose a question. Do you take food for granted? Food has the capacity to bring us together. It's familiar, relational, cultural. In times of conflict and scarcity, it also has the capacity to tear us apart. How food secure are you? In a world with increasing ecological degradation and greater disparities between the rich and poor, food security is of increasing global concern, a food fight to avoid. In Australia, we're distracted, choking, and bloated on misinformation and choice about food, which in itself is a recipe for ruin. And, to quote from the event's program, Recipe for Disaster is an interactive performative dinner experiment in the iconic Mad Max South Lawn Car Park. This meal will not be your conventional sit-down, hoity-toity dinner, nor is it dystopian in its approach. Instead, it will be a mashup of food courses, movements, and provocations from four food experts, a speculative journey, and palaver, into the future, to explore how our myths, anxieties, pleasures, conveniences, and comforts around food and diets in the context of a climate and everything change future. This is not catering. Food will be experienced, and expectations may be disrupted and or savored.
The focus is not about food. Tonight, the food is about the palaver.
So who brought this concept to life? Who was the chief provocateur of Recipe for Disaster? Dr. Jen Ray is a NARM Melbourne-based artist researcher of Canadian Métis Scottish descent. Her 15-year body of work is all about environmental art and arts-based environmental communication. It is centered around cultural responses to climate change, specifically the role of artists. Jen is the director and creative lead of Fair Share Fair, where art, performance, disaster preparedness, and cookery collide disrupting expectations, and busting myths.
Behind me, we have provocateurs and we have moderators. The focus is not about food. Tonight, the food is about the palaver. So a palaver is a rigorous conversation. It's something that you hold outside of yourself. There are some rules of engagement. All of you are experts. You're bringing to the table your experiences. It is about poking a provocation. It's not about coming up with an answer. It's about pushing it and asking questions and seeking clarity. In thinking about the future, food is something that has the tendency to bring us together, but in times of conflict, it has the potential to tear us apart. And so 29% of our greenhouse gas emissions come from food. We've been given 11 and a half years. Now, if we take 11 and a half years and we go back in time, that was when the iPhone started to come out. If you think about the iPhone, how much smartphones have transformed our culture, we've got 11 and a half years where we can actually do something, right? And so tonight, this is about hopefully building some relationships, shifting some of your ideas, busting some myths, and maybe squashing some anxieties. I'm going to ask some questions. So if it's true, I'd like you to step forward. In the past 7 days, I ate alone more than 3 times. I ate alone more than 5 times. I spend on average 15 minutes a day preparing food. There's no judgment here or anything, by the way. I know more than 5 people in my community, and that is your geographical community to your home. I know more than 50 people. I know more than 100 people in my community close to my home. I know more than 200 people. Those of you who I've just tapped, I'd like you to come with me. Okay, so you'll be having some plates that are coming out here tonight. These plates, very special plates. We worked with Queen Victoria Market to convert about 300 kilograms of lettuce waste into these plates tonight. So they're just being handed out. The water that you're going to be offered to drink is some of the water that was saved from the lettuce that was dehydrated. So just to give you an idea, it was 60 kilograms of lettuce that produced about 55 kilos of water. So it's been filtered and so forth, so you'll be able to drink that tonight.
Tell me about the lettuce water.
Oh, the lettuce water. Oh, my God, that was so great. I love that. It was such an honor to work with Madison Ryder. I have so much respect for her practice and her thinking. I had a conversation with Tilly. We had a production meeting, and I got into the car, and I heard Madison being interviewed on ABC Radio about these plates that she had made. And I just went, I need to talk to her. And so I think I called her. I think I called her out of the blue, or I sent her an email or whatever. And I said, can we meet? I want to hear about what you're doing, but also I've got this crazy thing coming up and maybe we could chat about it. And so, she had just won the Victorian Sustainable Design Award. She had developed a prototype in her honors degree, converting lettuce waste into plates. She told me that it takes roughly 3 kilograms to make one plate, really labor-intensive process. She's doing it in her home kitchen. You know, and I was saying, could you do 60, 70? And she, I think she just went completely white and just realized what that ask was. And so we dissected her process, and then I contacted Queen Victoria Market and said, what do you guys do with your green waste? You know, what do you do with your lettuce waste? And at this point, we were still seeing, you know, possibly we could do more than just lettuce. We could try all different veggies and stuff like that. And we also needed to come up with a system to be able to do more than 3 kilograms at a time. And so we ended up consulting with some different biodigesters, you know, these like whizzy machines that dehydrate and make things into powder, and some make them into fertilizer, some make them into other sort of raw material to make into other products. And Madison was able to find an organization that could work with her to provide the machine. Queen Victoria Market set her up as sort of the designer in residence, so she could talk about her process, but at the same time collect the lettuce. And she spent, you know, a month processing hundreds of kilos of lettuce. And in the last process, like I said to Madison, what happens with the water, right? Lettuce is something like 97% water. And she said, I think they just pour it down the drain. And I said, well, can you save me it? And so then went through a process of figuring out, you know, how would I filter this? How could we drink it? You had the option of lettuce water or I think I called it hose water because the water was coming out of a hose. And people drank the lettuce water because it actually looked cleaner. So I didn't think people would drink it, but, you know, this idea of sparkling or flat water, that will just mix it up a little bit. And did you try it? Did it taste lettuce-y to you?
Tasted chlorophyll-y.
Yeah, it didn't have any chlorophyll in it. Like, it was... Oh, chlorophyll-y. Sorry, I was thinking chlorine. Yeah,
green. It's a green.
Yeah. I mean, it was green when I got it, and then through the process of filtering and so forth, it actually became, like, you couldn't even see any dust particles or anything in it. But, I mean, it's an interesting proposition about embodied water in our food.
What I'd like you to do is to introduce yourself to everyone that's in your table, and I'm going to hand it over to the provocateurs to get this first palaver started. What I've asked the provocateurs is to give us sort of that nugget, the nugget of the conversation that you've had.
Hello. We had a fascinating conversation, thank you to the provocation of Jen Sheridan, about whether grazing livestock is the quickest way to turn around climate change. We had some very interesting reflections which expanded our idea of different kinds of living organisms and the contributions that they make to sustainability and what our responsibility as stewards is of those kinds of different organisms. I think one of the most powerful parts of the conversation was thinking about our relationship to physical spaces of soil. And so some people sort of saying in the city that they don't feel very connected to soil and don't necessarily understand the scope and importance of it. And also honouring your compost by making sure that you feed it with your vegetables. So you're sharing vegetables with your soil, which I thought was a lovely notion.
Thank you. I mean, look at us. We're under concrete. There's concrete in every direction here. Yeah, thinking about soil in an urban context is quite... The idea that you could actually feed it as well is quite compelling.
Hey. Ooh, that's it. Hi. Right, our conversation here with Tammy was mostly connected to a vegan diet and if that would place us in a better place than we are today. Very well placed by Tammy. She's a farmer herself and with very different perspectives how a vegan diet can actually, you know, bring solutions but also can bring some problems. And eventually we end up in this conversation about the care how you treat the land where you grow your food.
Thank you. Thank you, Gregory. Thank you, everyone. Wouldn't the world be amazing if we were rewarded for our generosity as opposed to, you know, some of the other things that we get rewarded to? Tara.
Thank you. So we talked about sovereignty as a way of healing land as well as each other, and Indigenous and non-Indigenous people coming together to look at that. We talked about commercialization of some of the Indigenous both knowledge and actual seeds that exists, and what happens when, you know, large-scale companies copyright those knowledges and access to those. We talked about ways of adapting. We talked about balancing the way that food is consumed over the course of a year, eating according to the season. And we also talked about how we deal with fear and what we do when we're thinking into these spaces, and where does hope sit in that. Nawi, would you like to repeat what you said right at the end?
When I watch all these shows and I think, oh God, here we go. We take up a lot of energy challenging government, expecting them to wave the wand, and I would be pushing government to get them to invest into the futures by creating stronger research to be able to look at how we could build a stronger future, invest in these institutions, because we can scream and shout all we want. I think we are the tools that can bring the change.
Thank you, Auntie. And Rosie.
Thank you, Jen. I'm just thinking in the context of an apocalypse, we have a slightly different topic, which is perhaps not even something we could indulge, but we're interested in the context of these enhanced health diets and things like the microbiome and the 5-2 diet. Is this fueling nutritional anxieties? And also, does this make us vulnerable to nutritional marketing? And we meandered through a range of different things, and some of the things that came up, like, I don't know if we've got one nugget, but we were lucky to be have Georgie here and talking about food and the reductionism of food to its nutritional value. So we talked about how food can be categorised into good and bad foods. We also talked about how we eat and who we eat with is often part of what we eat. There was a nice comment around, you know, is it better to eat a carrot by yourself or a donut with a group of people? And so we started to think about, thank you for that contribution. We started to talk more about than just the reductionism, but the other aspects of what makes healthy food. The school systems came up, the way in which young people think about food and food literacy came up. Yeah, so we covered some terrain around ultra processing, and also the idea of the body as a machine and how the role of the active life plays out in sort of the different ways in which food is conceptualised as fuel or for health and the complexity of that. Hopefully I've covered... Yeah, we've got a range of great people here, so...
I'm really interested in the palaver as a form. I've been doing, I think, informal palavers for some time, but then actually really looked at the power of having a rigorous conversation without an intended outcome, you know, but actually to focus on the fact of spending a long time with a group of people, just like a dinner conversation, you know, with different members of your family, and that the longer you spend, you know, you start to understand that people have different motivations. You hear, you know, like the extroverts will speak up right away and the introverts will sit there for a little while and start to connect the points and so forth. But oftentimes in sort of brainstorming sessions or in other forms where we have dialogue, they're too short. And we don't let those connections to be made. And I look at the palaver, this idea of a rigorous conversation, as very similar to the way in which we make art, right? We go into the studio, we go into the theater, we go into any sort of space where we create. And it's very rare to have an aha moment. This idea of a creativity continuum, that the longer you spend, whether it's having dialogue or, you know, creating, the longer you spend, the crazier your ideas become, right? So, and then you have exhaustion. But in the beginning, that initial time that you spend together, you're just working out each other. You know, your ideas are these things that have already been done before. They're boring. You know, it's kind of like the first, it's reactive. But the more time you spend, you know, you get to this crazy, it starts to mount. And somewhere between crazy, which is like testing a vaccination on yourself or putting a man on the moon, and boring, you find something interesting, right? And that's what I see the palaver as, is something that is generative. You don't know where it's going to take you, but in that act, you're starting to form relationships and connection points and so forth. So that's this idea of the palaver.
And then imagine the diversity if everyone did that.
What a great way to close off tonight. And also, I just want to thank you. I also want to thank the Boonwurrung Foundation. And also to the Science Gallery Melbourne, Tilly Bullen, I don't know where you are. Thank you for eating my cricket Chico rolls and asking me to do this. Queen Victoria Markets and City of Melbourne and Madison. I came out of Science Gallery office and Madison was on the radio because she won, is it the Sustainable Design Award for her prototype for these lettuce plates? Called her up and I said, hey, I've got this project. And her family were in their living room this week polishing up these plates all together. So thank you very much, Madison. That was brilliant. In the kitchen, also Alex and George. George does food. She's back there, and Alex Daith, who on Friday nights at Faulkner Food Bowls, where we live, you can come and Alex cooks your dinner, and we do sorts of workshops and stuff out there. To all of the volunteers that have made this tonight, to the people who are going to be doing the work after this, turning a lot of this food waste into fertilizer and soil, and the chairs are all. The reason why you're sitting on these sorts of chairs is that they're going into the community gardens in the north. We're hoping to make this sort of that tonight actually gives everything back. So thank you very much for tonight.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us as we took you to Recipe for Disaster, a palaver about food security and insecurity, climate change, and everything else. Thank you to Jen Ray for letting us record this event, produce this episode of Artbreaker, and for sitting down with me for an interview at Displaced, the show at the North Melbourne Art Space she co-produced. The show that, through the arts, grapples with how communities handle natural disasters and how they can best prepare for them. Displaced is well worthy of its own episode of Artbreaker, and I hope to bring that to you in the future. If you enjoyed this show, please tell a friend and recommend to us any great artists you know working on the intersection of the climate crisis. You can get in touch with us at hello@climactic.fm, and we're always seeking more members of the Climactic Collective to produce either this show or a new show on the Climactic Network. We're an independent production and a social enterprise, and are currently only supported by the generosity of the collective. So if you enjoyed this show and you'd like to help keep us going, please visit our Pausible and make a small monthly donation to the show. It truly would go a long way to creating more of the media our climate community needs. Thank you for your time. We'll be back soon with another Artbreaker. And in the meantime, stay creative in these climactic times.